webcasting to the world.
Do you remember the moment you saw yourself and God in you, and you were one with the universe and God and everybody?
Knowing the truth about the gospel.
You were one with the prostitutes and pimps and priests and kings, and there was nobody on earth that was better than you nor less than you.
That we are all righteous.
And no one on earth was any less in Christ than anyone else.
That's Mike Williams, and this is the Gospel Revolution.
Welcome to the Gospel Revolution Powercast for Thursday, July 20, 2017, broadcasting from the home of redemptionism, where we love every train of thought visiting our station of freedom. We're coming to you from the Gospel Revolution studios right here in Eva, Alabama, thanks to the generosity of GR executive producers Jimmy and Carrie McCollum. But right now, from Palm Beach Gardens in Florida, bringing you more consistent, persistent, repetitive CPR of the gospel is the president and founder of the Gospel Revolution, Michael Williams. Hello, Michael. How are you?
Hello, Don Bartlett. I am doing well today. I'm in South Florida. Of course I'm doing well.
Well, that's not what I heard. I heard you've had a hell of a week is what I heard.
Yeah, it has been a bit difficult, but, you know, this too has passed and things are going well. But, yeah, I had a short visit into the ER last Thursday with pancreatitis. Oh, my goodness, that stuff's mean.
where you've been for the last several days?
Yes, it has been it was a trip. So like your pancreas releases these very, I don't think we realize how abrasive the digestive fluids are that it takes to break down food in the stomach. Mm. They're very, very harsh. They're extremely harsh. I mean, they're there to chew up food, you know, chemically. Without food in your stomach, if those enzymes are released into your stomach, they still want to do what they're there to do, and that's chew up and eat things.
Man.
That's what pancreatitis is. It is a overreaction of the pancreas. When there is no food there to eat, it not only discharges these enzymes, but does it in abundance. And after a while, they actually start eating you. So it's not a fun thing to go through. In the long run, if you don't get it under control, it is deadly. I got excellent care, absolutely excellent care.
Excellent. Michael, this week we got, did I say, I'm very sorry that you were not well. Did I say that? It doesn't matter. Mike.
You've said that several times during the week. Gospel
Revolution. This week, Mike, we got a bit of a full mailbag here.
Okay.
We got an email from Glenn Ryan, not Klein, or is it Rain? Rian, or is it the French, Rion? Glenn Rion. Anyway, Glenn, you say, hi there, Mike, or whoever is reading this. When you send your emails, by the way, to Freedom at Gospel Revolution, the chances are that both Mike and I get to read them. But it doesn't matter because we'll bring them out on the show anyway. You say, I've been listening to Mike's series on predestination. Absolutely love it. Family, if you haven't got them, get them. Go to the front page of gospelrevolution.com, and they're just sitting there, and all you got to do is click on them. You don't even have to right-click on them. Just click on them, and they'll download to your machine or your phone or whatever it is.
Yeah.
And I've been sending these into Africa this week, mate, but I'll tell you more about that later. You say, Glenn, you say you absolutely love them, as with most of the teachings. Thanks for the freebie, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, what I would like to know is that on the second day of teaching, Mike mentioned that Don Bartlett spoke last night, and Don was teaching about Jesus being God, yet it isn't on the MP3. Was this recorded? If so, how can...
Yes.
If so, how can I purchase it? Thanks for your help.
Come on.
Huh?
Come on, Glenn. Put Mr. Don on the rack here. Come on.
Well...
And...
And then we got another email.
No, and?
What are you talking about, and?
And was it recorded?
Yes, it was.
Are these people ever going to hear this Don Bartlett part?
Only if they pay me. I'm not going to be a fool like you and give them away for nothing, mate.
Well, I'm sure they'd be glad to pay you.
Yeah, well, it'll be a lot of money. Okay, so what happened was at the last Calgary conference, Mike recorded 4 sessions, I recorded 3. Mike's sessions have gotten broken up into, I think it's 6 different, because you just jabber on for so long, mate.
I got long-winded again.
You did. You long-winded. So anyway, the 2 first ones of mine came out perfectly good. In fact, they're absolutely brilliant. In fact, some people would call them, well, they're just fantastic and probably worth $40 a piece. Or if I was Dr. James Richard, $490 a piece. But the last one, I didn't press the record button. I thought I did, I didn't, and we're still waiting for me to re-record that. So that's been the holdup. I have been sitting on my hands, I know that, and I haven't actually. I'm pretty busy. But I plan to, look, why don't I give myself a 2-week deadline and get them out? And tell myself or give myself a 2. Do you think that'd help, Mike, if I did that?
No.
No, that's what I thought. But saying it makes me feel so much better.
Yeah, the only thing we can do is have everybody start an email campaign of sending in emails to Don Bartlett over and over and over and over again. Get it done. Get it done.
I tell you what, they send me the emails and I'll send them to GoFundMe address.
If we all sing one song of love, one song of peace, one song to make our Lord tremble feast, one hymn, one theme, one heart.
Now, we also heard from Doug Salonen. Been a while since we heard from you, Doug. Great always to hear from you. And you said, Mike Williams Ministries, I had this thought this morning listening to the podcast. God didn't have to tell us anything, just keep it to himself. Now, I want you to follow this family because it took me a second read to actually get this.
Yeah.
But he makes a wonderful point. God didn't have to tell us anything, just keep it to himself, do it in the background. He could have just left us in the dark and not written a book about it, just let it happen. Jesus dying on the cross and then not a peep about it. Let us be ignorant and put us in the ground when we die and then spill the beans to us. Let us in on what he accomplished at the cross. Would we have been better off? No Bible equals no translations equals no religions equals no preachers. Oh, boy. I suppose we would get to the point before the flood where in Genesis 6, 5 through 7, talking about Noah and his sons, God saw that human evil was out of control. People thought evil, imagined evil, 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 from morning to night. God was sorry that he made the human race in the first place. It broke his heart. God said, I'll get rid of my ruined creation, make a clean sweep, peoples, animals, snakes, bugs, birds, the works. I'm sorry I made them. I think you what do you think about that, mate?
Well, I think that I really appreciate the comments and the question because here is a very fundamental thing about all of this that I'm persuaded of. And I think this is really brings to the front what what our misconception is about the gospel, that it's about life after death. And the gospel is not about life after death. The gospel is about right now. It's about how understanding and knowing that God and man are one, that this human race has the possibility to have a completely different future and a progress. We've marked great progress, but I think it's been so minimal compared to what we could have had this knowledge been here. The realization of all the spiritual things has resulted in a knowledge-based, logic-based reality that we can function in. So if all of this was hidden from us continually, now obviously it was hidden for a reason all the way up to the cross, and for some reason it was revealed at the cross, according to Paul, is also so profound that it has been the goal of religion to cover it right back up again. So, no, I don't think that this would be a good process, that we maybe should have just had, just wait until we wake up on the other side. I tell you what, if that were to happen to me now, I would feel terribly cheated, because everything about the gospel to me is not about life after death. To me, everything about the gospel is about living this life now and how I see myself, how I see others. Now, the one point that he brings out here is very true, but we can't throw away the gospel that we are beginning at least to understand, is that religion has totally taken this over, has abused, misused, mistranslated, misguided out of ignorance, nefarious reasons, absolutely manipulative, controlling reasons. There's everything across the spectrum as to why this has happened out of what does contain the truth of the gospel. But that does not mean that this the value of the gospel should be overlooked just to get rid of all of what has happened by those who, for many different reasons, who have misused and abused the story over all of these years.
Well, so what about his original question? Sorry, did you want to finish?
No, go ahead. Go ahead.
What about his original question? Why didn't God God didn't have to tell us anything? Could have just done it in the dark, and we woke up and here we were, holy, righteous, perfect, and at one with him and the rest of the universe.
We wouldn't know it. It's the process that brings the knowledge.
And what value is that knowledge?
That knowledge is the saving of the soul. It is what this planet needs. That knowledge and the logic of that knowledge is what's going to cause us to be more effective in life for each other. To me, the benefit of a life is how much in my relationships is how much are we there for each other. And without understanding who we are, I really don't think that we could have done that. The story is so priceless. The story is so valuable. Just waking up and being is not going to give us what we need, because remember, the gospel is there to give us knowledge and understanding. Just having a spiritual event that nobody was privy to would not do for us. Obviously, Christ died for the entire world, but the impact of that, especially through religion, has not only been nullified, but has been, they vilified Christ. I still want to do a power cast on defamation of character of Jesus Christ and put Christianity on trial for defamation of character. And I guess my whole disposition about the gospel is the power of this knowledge that I can't go to this arena of, why not just have done it, and whether we know about it or not. It's knowing about it that is the powerful thing. That's the power of it. It obviously, the doing of it in many cases, has benefited no one. The knowledge of it benefits everyone.
Genesis chapter 6, verse...
And, Barris, let me go back just a moment. I wanted to say this series on, and I really appreciate the comments about the series on predestination. I can't tell you how much this series is impacting people's thinking. And I'm telling you, people that have been gospel revolutionaries for 30 years, this thing is so impactful. They just feel as though they've entered a whole broader dimension of thought and understanding, a space within which to think and within which to reason about life and existence on planet Earth. I know that it did it for me. I can't always assume that something that has benefited me, that it's going to benefit everybody else the same way. But the fact of it is, if it's the gospel, it is going to benefit everybody the same way. And I've had several phone calls discussing. I'm talking with some friends that were a part of the gospel revolution. Several years ago, many years ago, we drifted apart, and now I'm back in contact with them again. In fact, they were on Jim Richards' staff years ago, and they've got the new series. She and her husband have got the new series on the predestination series. And they're just absolutely being re-energized in just about in every way about the gospel and involvement. She was telling me, gosh, I don't even, I haven't picked up my Bible. I'm not Bible oriented anymore. But as she's listened to this, she and her husband both, as they've listened to this, it has really energized them in a new way. And also, it just gives it has such freedom, and the just understanding. It puts you in a frame of thought that you will be surprised at how your thought processes go after you listen to this. Now, I can't tell you how many people either, Don, that have told me they're on their fifth, sixth, seventh, eighth, ninth, tenth time and more in going through this thing. So again, please do not hesitate. Whether you've ever been a part of this Gospel Revolution or Mike Williams Ministries at all you have to do, and you don't even have to search through the website, just go to the front page. You don't have to do anything. Like Don said, you just click on it. It's yours. And they're all five, they're just laid out there right in front of you. And all you do is click on them and you hear them. That's how easy this is. There's no filling out your name. There's no, we're not going to know who you are, for what purposes you are listening to this. And we don't need to know. We just want you to hear it.
Love it. And yes, we're just getting people in contacting us either by email or by Facebook or some other way. Telling us that they keep listening to this because it keeps feeding them. Yeah. And it will keep feeding you, because I promise you one thing, family, you will not get everything first time through. I was sitting in the meetings there, and it was a lot like trying to drink from a fire hose, Mike.
Well, I felt that from the other end of this, and it was like trying to get, an ocean out of a straw. There was just so much behind it, and you can hear it. I've apologized to people for the intensity that this is coming out, but you've got to understand the intensity that was behind it. I had this incredible amount of understanding and information that I'm trying to use my brain to keep from just hosing people down, if you will, and like a water cannon in a riot. But it was difficult. I could not contain myself for the information that I knew was coming out with this. Many times when you're standing up speaking, you're searching for your next, where you're going from here and from there, or you're searching for your next steps. But this was it was more like something behind me pushing me. I wasn't looking for my next steps. I was just trying to stay on my feet. So,
yeah. I want to, perhaps I could address this email from Doug Salonen. God didn't have to tell us anything, just keep it to himself, do it in the background. Yes, he could have. He could have done all of that, but I believe that all he would have had then was robots.
Yeah.
Because that begs the question, well, he could have made robots and then told them the history of them. And they'd say, oh, wonderful, praise you, Jesus, hallelujah, or something. But they would still have been robots in as much as they were made to fulfill a function and nothing else. But by doing it this way, and I've often used the simile that when I taught my kids to wash and wipe dishes, I knew some were going to get broken. Did I tell them they couldn't wash and wipe dishes? No, I let them make the mistakes and learn from the mistakes, and I believe that's what's happened in the human race. Mm-hmm. We had to have the history and accept it as actual in order for us to appreciate the journey that we've come on to get to where we are. Now, that's the first part. The second part, wouldn't we have been better off? No Bible, no translations, no religion, no preachers. I don't agree, and I'll tell you why. And this is, I think, just a function of humanity, Doug. It doesn't matter. I mean, you can do anything you like. This country, the USA, started out in a profoundly wonderful sense. No one's going to tell me it operates now like it was planned to operate. I just am not sure that that's entirely true. It seems that everything that is born evolves. There is no getting away from the fact that evolution is real in everything. And in religion, it's almost more real than in other places, because once you get into religion, you have to have a guru, you have to have a sacred space, you have to have sacred books, and then you've got to have people who only those people can interpret these. Say, oh, please. I love this story. When Philip was talking with the second in charge, the 2IC, or the financial comptroller of the nation of Ethiopia, a nation that was very close to Israel in many ways, he comes across this fella and he's reading Isaiah 53, and he says, you know what you're reading, don't you? And the fella says, how on earth am I going to know what I'm reading? I'm trying my best here. And Philip sits down and explains it to him, and the eunuch says, oh, wow, oh, okay. Well, here's water. What stops me being baptized? And Phil says, here, quick, duck in there, mate, and I'll dump your head under the waves, and it's all going to be just fine. Well, it was only 300 years later that the embryonic Catholic Church taught that you had to study for 3 years before you could become baptized. But here was the kicker. If you weren't baptized, you would die and go straight to hell.
Yeah.
That was only 300 years.
Yeah.
We've been in this for 2,000 years, mm-hmm. and it ain't getting better. That's the only thing I'm going to tell you. Entropy is we are not getting any better. All it can do is get worse in Christianity.
Yeah.
So then you make the point about the flood. Let me remind you that Noah was not the only time that God wanted to start again. In fact, in the Noah case, he wanted to start again without Noah, but yeah, the way you read the text. In Moses' case, he wanted to start with a second Adam in Moses. So this was not a once for God. God seems to have been able to get to this place of, I think it says in Genesis, grieving. The next thing he says, God saw that the human evil was out of control. People thought evil, imagined evil. It was sorry that he'd made the human race in the first place. It broke his heart. God said, I'll get rid of, and notice this, people thought evil only from morning to night. Now, you're reading in the Message, but it's the same as it says basically in King James. If that was true, if all people were thinking all evil, always, where the hell did Noah come from? I mean, Noah found grace in the eyes of the Lord. So this is obviously, it's not a literal reading. It's a generalization to be taken. And then really, we must start from the verse before 5. We always start at verse 5. Let's read verse 4. There were giants in the earth in those days, and also after that when the sons of God came in unto the daughters of men. That word sons of God, elsewhere in the scriptures, it means angels. It's angelos, if you look at it in the Septuagint, the Greek version. It's angelos. They're angels. They came in unto the daughters of men. These are just simply women. And they bare children to them the same, became mighty men, which were of old, men of renown. Now, we know that either this happened again after the flood, or it didn't quite catch everyone going through the flood, because we have the instance of Goliath being another one of these mighty men of old. What was the offspring? They are called Nephilim. Now, we can only surmise some things, but we can certainly conclude others. It repented the Lord that he had made man on the earth, and it grieved him at his heart. Yes, I understand that. But have you ever thought of that little phrase, on the earth? Maybe he could have made man in heaven. Or on Mars. So we tend to read this without actually giving it full logical thought. There are another couple of things I'd like to mention here. Number one is that the verse that says, and Noah was perfect and all of his generations, could just as easily be translated, he was perfect in all his genes. Now, in the light of the actual context, one verse earlier or two verses earlier, it's talking about the Nephilim being the illicit half-breeds of the mating of the sons of God and the daughters of men. Now, we don't even know who built the pyramids or how on earth they built something which we can't even with today's technology reproduce. We don't know what all the secret passages mean. We don't know why they were placed around the world in different places, both in South America and we don't know what. There is so much about our own planet we do not know, and we have no way of saying how they got there. Is it impossible that there were Nephilim on the earth who produced things that are even beyond our technology today? Is it possible? Here is something which I find we do far too much of still. Certainly did a lot of it within the bounds of Christianity, and that is we tend to think that what God has told us something about, he has told us everything about, and nothing could be further from the truth. Here at the Gospel Revolution, we are marked by a certain characteristic, and that is we are not going to say that we believe that anything is true until we have had the opportunity to thoroughly research and explore it. Now, that sets us apart from some of our friends elsewhere who, in an attempt to explain away those parts of the Bible they don't quite understand or they can't tie up with other parts of the Bible, they might call it allegorical or they might call it just plain wrong. Of course, here is a problem when you start saying this is allegorical but that's not. Who determines that? Who becomes the arbiter of good taste? Who becomes the arbitrator of what's right and what's wrong? Well, it all becomes highly personalized and highly subjective. There's no objectivity in that. You and I have seen that time after time when our senses want to outlaw a movie or they want to outlaw a book. It just makes it... who says that they have the authority to arbitrate good taste or good morals? Once I have set myself up as the arbiter of what's right and wrong, what's allegorical, what's literal, what is a mistake, what is just men's opinions or men's writings up against what Jesus called the scriptures, once I set myself up as that person, I can make anything mean anything. There is now no fixed landmarks against which we can measure anything. As I said, here at the Gospel Revolution, we do things a little differently. There are two things that lay at the foundation of redemptionism. One is the reliability of the scriptures, and two is the reliability of the resurrection of Jesus Christ. Now, I taught on this in a Calgary conference. You'll find it up in the store. Go get you it. These messages gave me a far, far stronger foundation on which to stand, far stronger. And I'm more convinced than ever now that God predestined us all to life from before the foundations of the world. So I was asked this week, do I ever think of becoming an agnostic? And I had to say, no, I don't. I really don't. And it's not because I was born under a pew. It is because the evidence, not only for God, but for the predestination of the whole world is so overwhelming as to be impossible to ignore. I said to this person who asked me if I was any closer to becoming agnostic after studying out and researching the fault lines and false claims of Christianity, I asked him, when did you stop listening to the gospel? That was just the first thing that came into my mind. I think that the CPR of the gospel is what saves my soul every single day. It is because I have personally, and to the best of my understanding, thoroughly researched everything that I believe, and the rest of it I want to lay down and say, well, there's a 99% probability that that's true, there's a 99% probability that's untrue, but only certain things am I prepared to hold on to like a rock anymore. And for that, I thank Mike Williams Ministries and the Gospel Revolution. We much rather prefer to be certain about what we teach. The last thing I'd like to say is this, that all along from the foundations of time, foundations of the earth, from before time began, God had a plan, and that plan was that he would start over, that he would end the Adamic race, and he would start over with a new creation in Jesus Christ.
Yes, thank you for all that information, and to follow up on that, if we missed the story, if we missed the history of this, when I think of all the things that could possibly happen if humans had one trait, one quality in them all equally, that this world would undoubtedly be in a better place. You'd say, oh, well, that would be love. Well, you know, people define love in very many different ways. You know, they... Andrea Yates loved her children so much she killed them so that they wouldn't grow up and die and go to hell. But the one thing that I think is so powerful in my mind is the term conflict resolution. Just think if there was conflict resolution ability in every human being. Many years ago, I came to the word that is in the New Testament. It's called implacable. And I knew, well, that's not a word I use every day. And as a Bible teacher, I had to look up the word implacable. It's in that list of things that are against nature and things that were the worst of the worst list. And the word implacable means unwilling to resolve dispute or conflict, if you will. So conflict resolution, number one, just stop and think about it just a minute, folks. What if everyone involved in this planet and its affairs had not only the ability in them for conflict resolution, but also the desire and willingness? Now, implacable means you don't want conflict resolution. Something in you thrives on not resolving conflict.
It's almost like having a contentious personality.
Yes, and I think that that comes from insecurity. I think it comes from lack of identity. I think it really does when we have this implacability to where that I don't want to resolve this. I don't want to go down this path at all. But if we had the desire for resolution to conflict, and then have the tools for conflict resolution, I don't know of anything. If I were given the option to elevate and evolve the human race on any one personality trait, gifting, insight, whatever you might want to call it, I wouldn't give us more love, more joy, more peace. I wouldn't give us any of those things. I would say, give us not only conflict resolution tools, but the desire to resolve conflict.
Wouldn't that lead to peace, and wouldn't that come from love anyway?
Well, exactly. So, I mean, this is conflict resolution. It's like the working out of love. It's the working out of joy. It's the working out of peace. This is how we work out this entire thing that has come about to us through the work of the cross. we've had so many people have such a great problem with the conflict that is recorded in the Bible, in the scriptures between God and man. Well, no, God is love. There's couldn't have ever been conflict. No, God had no conflict with man. Well, the fact of it is, the only way we can ever have conflict resolution is by an example. Look at the example we've got now of conflict resolution. God was angry. How angry? Oh, my goodness. Read the stories. You'll see how angry. Vengeance and jealousy. All of those things are not what you call conflict resolution. Anger, jealousy, vengeance, wrath. That's not conflict resolution at all. But what we have then is now in Christ, there has been a process through which God went through to where he is now no longer angry. He's now no longer jealous. He now no longer has wrath. There's none of that anymore.
But let me ask you this. If he knew this was going to happen, I mean, the scripture says that he knows the end from the beginning. If he knew this was all going to happen, I mean, why get angry? I mean, why not just go and can you look at the little puny people? They just don't get it, do they? But I know what's happening.
That's how important this is to us, that God's own anger was predestined so that we could understand this whole issue of conflict resolution, because this is a part of humanity, the resolution of the fusion of God and man coming together. God who was angry, man who was sinful, God who was jealous and wrathful, man who was a failure, all of these opposites. Just think of what that does to the psyche of the human who understands this was all resolved. This was all completely resolved. What do we have when we understand that? You might ask, well, Mike, where do these tools and desire for conflict resolution come from? It comes from the gospel. It comes from the story. We see where there was a resolution to divides in this relationship between God and man. And no man was never separated from God. If he had been, they would have never experienced God's anger and wrath and jealousy at all. If you're separated, you're away. You know, when you go through a separation in a marriage, it's because you don't want to experience that thing. Okay, we're getting separated here. I'm getting away from you because you're abusive, because blah, blah, blah. And when you separate, you don't experience that. Well, there was no separation between God and man whatsoever. There was just conflict. And the scriptures tell us that everything that happened was a preordained, predestined thing for God and for man up to the cross. I believe that that gives us the DNA for conflict resolution. And knowing the story is the power of bringing that desire to resolve conflict and the ability to resolve conflict to the fore.
Doug Salonen, thanks for that email, and keep them coming, please.
Yes.
If we all sing one song of love, one song of peace, one song to make all our troubles cease, one hymn, one theme, one hope, one dream. Imagine what tomorrow if we all sing one.
Our next email is from Sean Smith, the greatest living slung dunging monkey, love monkey of the South or whatever. And Sean says, I have observed some who began with the gospel revolution make another religion out of bashing Christianity. I've been guilty of that in the past. It's pure inanity and way past insanity. Mm-hmm. Christianity seems to have become a resurrected devil to those who leave it. Then there are those who get into stuff post-GR that the best angel dust couldn't bring to mind. I have my theories from my observation of people, starting with me. So now for the question, why do people get freed, indeed, and then belly on up to another religion? Sean?
It would be a great stretch of my imagination and thought to say that someone's pointing out the fallacy, the lies, the pain, the anguish, death, destruction that has been caused by the religion that we came out of was creating a new religion by doing so. I don't agree with that statement. Everybody's going to deal with this as they choose to. Now, the one thing that I do realize is that I'm not nearly as angry as I was 25 years ago. I mean, when I got up, I was mad every time I got up just because of finding out about law and grace and gospel of peace. Now, if we were, if people were dishing out their views, and if those views were unfounded and they were directed at people, then we would have something that I think that is, it would not be becoming whatsoever. But we are not on any type of crusade against Christians. Are we against Christianity? I am very much against Christianity.
Well, wouldn't you have to first answer the question, which Christianity?
Well, and that's the case. So do we not speak up about any and all of the atrocities of this religion?
Like, for example, the Christianity that was followed by the guy who shot the abortion doctor, the Christian, apparently a born-again Christian, who murdered and killed an abortion doctor a couple of years ago. Should we be against his Christianity?
Yeah. I do understand the heart. I hear the sentiment coming from this statement and the desire that we, you know, let's just all get along. I can do that. If we were just talking about a difference of opinion, then I could wrap my arms around this, but this stuff's deadly.
And it's not only deadly, it's deadly in the name of Jesus Christ.
In the name of Jesus Christ. It's deadly to children. And I hate just throwing out these individual examples, but what else can you do? I can't give you the entire history of the atrocities of Christianity, the Crusades, and the way that young gay men and women are treated by their own families, not because their parents are evil. It's because the religion they're trapped in is evil.
Then you have the Spanish Inquisition. You've got slavery in America, well and truly backed by the Southern Baptist Convention. Yeah, it's deadly.
So is it a religion to speak up against this? Well, I'm not persuaded of that whatsoever. What sayest thou, Don Bartlett?
Mate, I just said it all, I think. Interrupting you. Mate, I'm zeroing in on his last question. Sean says, so now for the question, why do people get freed indeed and then belly on up to another religion? Well,
that's a very good question.
It is. Presuming that you're not calling redemptionism or the gospel or the gospel revolution another religion, which I can understand when people do that.
Yes.
I really can. But there's a huge difference between a religion that says, do this, do that, do the other thing. Have you ever heard us say that? Yeah. You'll never hear us say that. If this is a religion, dang, it's got to be the weakest kind of religion I've ever seen in my life.
Yeah.
It's got to be the most lovingest religion. It's got to be the most freeingest religion. It's got to give people more opportunity to follow their heart than any other religion I've ever been involved with in my life. Yeah. So, presuming that you don't mean that the GR is another religion, why say would people get out of Christianity and then go to, say, Buddhism, for example?
Yeah.
Or Taoism or atheism.
Yeah, exactly.
Which I'm sorry, it's a religion. I don't care whether you call it a religion or not. All you got to do is go to a few atheist forums on the web and you'll see how religious they are. Now, why would they do that, Michael?
Do people come through the gospel revolution and go to a, quote, another religion? It's because they are human beings. The gospel doesn't teach you what to think. It teaches you how to think. Now, you're going to have to learn how to think from where you are. You've got to think through things from where you are. I don't know where you are. I don't know what you've been through. I don't know what colors your filters or built your filters. I don't know what has injured and wounded your life in the past. I don't know the questions that have been put there through decades possibly of abuse or bad relationships. I just don't know. The thing that I do know is that it does free you to think. The thing that does bother me, Sean, is that people that leave the awareness of the gospel to something else, when there's still so much more to be learned in the gospel, i.e., again, our recent conference in Canada. I would have hung on through all of this over all these years just to come to the knowledge and understanding of predestination. This is thrilling to me. I absolutely know the progress in my own heart and mind is very palpable for me and for others. People find exits, though. I think the true issue is not whether or not people find exits from the gospel revolution to other ways of thought. I think that's not our business. It's not our business to call them up and say, hey, what are you doing here? Hey, you know you're wrong. Hey, we don't do that to people. We'll hear them out, and if they've got any questions, we will answer those.
We might do it to you, Sean.
It may be necessary, you know. But just because we love you, brother. Yeah.
In the name of a love.
Exactly. So the issue about all of this is how do we treat them? Now, if you press them to the point, every one of these folks that I am aware of that have moved through redemptionism and gone on to some other belief system or non, they call it a non-belief system, but to say there is no God, that's a belief system. That takes a whole heap of faith, actually, to tell you the truth.
Mm-hmm.
But if you press them, they will tell you they still love the gospel because it brought them to a point to where that they could think for themselves. I don't know what it is about us humans, but we want to think for ourselves. We want to know that what we know it because we know it, not because just somebody told us about it. That's just a part of our humanity. We want to know because our knower knows it, not because somebody told us. And that's what we want. That's what the gospel revolution promotes. We want you to know it because you know it. I've said for many years, if I were teaching something that I did not really believe, know, and was convinced of the fact that this knowledge is already in the people who are hearing this, I wouldn't want to do it. We're not bringing knowledge to people they don't have. We're bringing knowledge to people that has not surfaced yet from their innermost parts. As we share that and this knowledge comes forward, it really is a gospel revolution. I'm proud of the gospel. I tell you what, I'm so proud of it. I'm proud of it not only because of what it does, I'm proud of it because of how we treat people who move on and say they don't agree with us anymore.
Thank you, Sean. Keep them coming, matey.
If we all sing one song of love, one song of peace, one song to make all our troubles cease, one hymn, one theme, one hope, one dream. Imagine what tomorrow would bring if we all
This week we heard from Robert DeVries, and he is, where is he? He's in Australia somewhere.
Oh, no, not another one.
You're going to, you're going to have a few of us, mate, riding
well,
your boat soon.
We will let you speak Australian to him.
He says, hi, Cobber, I've been listening, sir.
I didn't say Southern. I said.
I was trying to do it drunk, but I just can't do it drunk, you know? Hi, he says, I've been listening to the Seven Pillars of Wisdom, November 13, 2014. Now, there are three series that I would thoroughly recommend that everybody get. One is the Pillars of Wisdom, and he's saying that the one we released around November 13, 2014, you can go back through the archives and you can zero in on these dates, and you'll find a couple, both sides of this, a couple of these pillars we spent two podcasts on. But I would say that this is one of the best things we've done in the podcasting. And the other one, of course, would be the five things that changed at the cross.
Goodness, I want to go back and listen to those now. They just sound so good. I remember they were, but I just...
They were. Yeah. They were. He says, hi, I've been listening to the Seven Pillars of Wisdom. Your comments on the Book of Revelation are quite radical, to say the least. Yes, they are, Rob. They really are. I've been going through an ongoing revision of what I understood to be the gospel and am being confronted with serious questions in each and every sphere of my belief system. Get out of here. Is this email address the door to asking questions which periodically come to mind? I live in Australia, so regular phone calls are out of the question. Now, he sent this to freedom@gospelrevolution.com. Robert, if you're listening to me, yes, you got the right address.
Yes.
It's gone straight to there and straight to this podcast. And any question you ask, sending it to freedom@gospelrevolution.com will come to Michael and myself.
Yes.
I am not interested, he says, in arguments and fights. I've had enough crap dismantled to be wary about claiming to be totally correct about everything. Thanks for what you do. Regards, Rob. Rob, I heard a bit of sage advice yesterday from a quantum physics proponent. If you asked him, he wouldn't believe in a god. In fact, he makes some very, very interesting points about us living in a virtual reality. And just to tease some of you folks, because I am going to start teaching on this soon, people who make World of Warcraft or any of these other computer games are creating a virtual reality. Each blade of grass, each tree, each person, each rock, it has to be programmed in there by the creator. What is the one thing by which we can conclude we are living in a virtual reality? If you take all those people in SimCity and they go back far enough in their history, they're going to hit a brick wall, because that virtual reality started the moment that the operator mashed down on the big red button and said, turn it on the server and let all the people on the web play with this game. That's when it started. You can't go back past that. In our virtual reality of humanity, we cannot go back past the Big Bang Theory. And by the Big Bang Theory, I'm including every concept on the face of the planet regarding how this universe may have been created. I'm not for or against the Big Bang Theory. I'm using that as a term. You can't go back past it. Where did God come from? You can't go back past it. Where did our operator come from? You can't go back past that. So he makes these points about us living in a virtual reality. But here's one thing he said, which I thought was just ever so good. Never say everything's black and white, right or wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Simply say to yourself, look, I think 99.9% probability, this is probably true.
Exactly.
And the same with this is probably untrue. And it just saves us from being such black and white contenders for contention.
Mm-hmm. Keeps us thinking.
So, Rob, thanks, mate. Robert de Vries. Is that Dutch?
Could be de Vries.
De Vries. Robert de Vries. Okay. Robert, thanks, mate. Keep them coming. And if you're hearing this, I'm going to respond directly to, because I don't know if my answer went back to Freedom at Gospel Revolution or to your email address, Robert. So I'm going to email you this week and just let you know to listen to this.
Gospel Revolution.
Mate, we have so much stuff up on the web. This week we put up the dates for the conference, September 15, 16, and 17 mm-hmm. at the Carriage House in Calgary, Alberta. And my heart's going to be breaking because I'm going to miss the buffet. but mate, you're an old man. Are you sure you're up to, what is it, 6, maybe 7 sessions?
Mm-hmm.
I'll do anything to weasel an invite. You know that, don't you? you might need a break.
Oh, I'll definitely need a break. The number of sessions I think that I'm going to have to do this series, though, is going to put me under the gun to have to get this series out. I'm going to be teaching on the book of James. We're going to let James speak for himself. We're not going to twist James' words. We're going to compare them to Paul's words. And then we're going to compare he and Paul's words to the scriptures. And we're going to read exactly, as I started going into this, just finding out in the very first line of this letter that James wrote.
That he wasn't writing to you.
Yeah, no, number one, he wasn't writing to me. And specifically who he was writing to was quite a shocker. It gives you the motivation for saying the things he's saying if you know who specifically he is speaking to. And then the statements that are made, then you get to hold them up to the light of day and see what the implication of these statements are. There are statements that we make. We quote James all the time throughout the known world. And many of those things we are going to look at and see whether or not we're quoting them in the context in which we now use them. Or did James mean something else by the statement? Context is a very powerful thing. Knowing who someone is writing to is a very powerful thing. The motivation for writing that. And, when you know that someone is writing something, pretty much everything that I teach is colored by the fact of hearkening back to one of the emails we got. Just about all of it is colored a little bit by the way it's said, by my understanding of the devastation of Christianity. I don't think that they could possibly compare with James's negative views about Paul and his teachings. As I've gone through that, it is not just colored with it. Sometimes you can see that it was actually the impetus for the letter.
Now, I'm going to have to cut you short here, Mike, because we don't want to be telling people too much.
I know. I've already told them too much.
It's only a scant 8 weeks away, roughly. And so book your hotel rooms. Carriage House is just one fine establishment. And don't forget to stay for the buffet on Sunday morning. And Michael is going to be taking this on James. And, he is very kind. I'm just going to tell you, I've already done a session in Calgary with Mike, and mine was entitled James the Jerk. So if you think he's bad, wait till you. Anyway, you can't miss this because what Mike's doing is he's taking us back to the scriptures. Tell us again, because some people have just tuned in for the first time, what are the scriptures?
Well, it's very interesting that you asked that because the person that I'm in contact with right now organized the conference in Tulsa, Oklahoma, the very first time I taught on the scriptures, where I thought it would be a very smart thing to go to Tulsa, Oklahoma, and tell everybody the New Testament was not scripture. So anyway, this was a very defining moment for Mike Williams Ministries, for sure, and for myself. But we tend to accept exactly what Jesus said the scriptures are, the law, the Psalms, and the prophets. There is no proof that there is anything else written in any other books or even in the Bible that qualify as scriptures, and that is the law, the Psalms, and the prophets, or the Old Testament, if you will.
So Michael will be teaching from the book of James. He'll be directly comparing that with the teachings of Paul. I mean, right there. I mean, just don't go any further. Right there. You're in for a fireworks right there. And then he's going to compare them both back to the scriptures. You know, when you first talked about James, I said, who cares about James? James didn't care about me. He made sure he wasn't writing to Gentiles. Why should I care about James? But I'm starting to get the idea, mate. I'm slow. I'm slow.
Yeah. Just
give me a year or three and I'll be right.
I take that into consideration all the time.
Okay, Wayne Lees.
Hey, how do you like that song I've been playing through the show? I've got this new song called One Song. Oh, God. In fact, I went and looked it up. There are two songs called One Song, and but I don't know which one to play.
Oh, wow.
They are both so great.
This week, Wayne Lees wrote to us and said, wrote to me, and he said, Don, if you and Mike don't start pretending that you guys are perfect, with a perfect wife, children, and perfect life, you are never going to have a mega church or be tele-evangelist. So there. Take that. Thank you for being real and sharing your sometimes juvenile behavior, like getting mad at your fridge or car. It really does help us out here in GRland. Honesty breeds maturity. And for all of us juveniles looking for mature adulthood, it is refreshing. Thank you, Wayne, your friend, the heretic. And then he says, brackets, I finally figured out what I want to be when I grow up.
Mm.
A heretic. That's his new tagline. Loved it. Loved it.
Oh, that's nice.
Couldn't get enough of it.
Listen in your office, in your car, or even your neighborhood bar. You can listen with your whole family.
If you were in the Friends of Mike Williams in the Gospel Revolution in Facebook this week, you would have seen Brian Noyes? Anyway, he wrote, today my friend asked me for help. He wants to serve God full-time, but he is worried about the finances because he has two children to bring up. He asked me for advice and I had no idea. Brothers and sisters, could you help me? I got to tell you, Mike, we got some lovely answers back there. But what are your thoughts?
Well, first off, you don't have to be in an organization. You don't have to be in the, quote, five-fold ministry. Oh, goodness, those terms just seem so foreign anymore. You don't have to be in all of that. You know, if you want to, quote, serve God, look at the face of the person who is on the bus next to you. You know, the cashier at the supermarket. The only way you can serve God is by serving people. I think the most devastating thing that can happen to people's lives is that they believe that serving God is somehow separate from serving people. I want to do what God wants me to do.
Mm.
There is nothing God wants you to do. God don't want anything out of you. God doesn't want you to do anything. But you can do an awful lot by serving people, because the only God that exists now exists in the people that are around you. So by serving one another, we do then, by definition, I suppose, then we're serving God.
I remember something you said once, and it burned into my brain, and that was, if human children said to their human fathers, little girl, I got two little girls, or I had two little girls. If they had said to me, Daddy, please use me any way you want.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if people had heard that, they'd call the cops on us.
Yeah, exactly. I hear the heart of the person who's asking the question, you know, how do I serve, or wanting to serve God. But from that point, searching how to serve God within the confines of Christianity, it's not going to lead to something good for your life or anybody else's, just to be real honest with you. If it's not just going to be serving one another, I don't know what else it can be.
Yeah. No, I hear you stuttering, and you're wondering if there's anything else. Your brain is saying, what else can I say? And there is nothing else to say.
Well, there just really isn't. But you see how mammoth the question is. You see the history behind serving God. You see the religion behind serving God, the doctrines behind serving God. So other than just giving you that simple answer without going into and dismantling all of these doctrines of Christianity and every other religion on the face of the earth about serving God, that's, you know, we've only got just a few minutes to respond to this.
So, Brian Noyes, if you'd like Mike to address any of those other things, please write us again and let us know either on the Friends of Mike Williams and the and the Gospel Revolution, or just email us at freedom@gospelrevolution.com or call us on 1-2-3-4-5-6-4-0-9-7-1 or call us up on our own numbers. They're on the website. Barry Gustafson this week wrote to us, "There seems to be several covenants that God entered into before the new covenant, parenthesis kinship covenant, a grant covenant, and a vassal covenant." With all of them showing the futility of having humankind as a partner in them. The new covenant was established between God and Jesus. My question is this: do you believe there was only the covenant of Mount Sinai, the Mosaic covenant, or were there several prior to the new covenant?
I think the one that we've kind of left out here is God's covenant with Abraham. That is the one that brings us from the old covenant to the new covenant.
That's exactly what Jeff Robertson said on this post.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah.
Well, great minds think alike, you know. The covenant with Abraham is the covenant that was the that Christ fulfilled, this covenant with Abraham. And it's really funny, we call it the first and the second covenant, and we call the law the first covenant and the cross the second covenant. But actually, the law was a second covenant. Because Abraham, the covenant with Abraham, came long before Moses. In fact, Paul even makes the statement that the covenant that came through Moses could not disannul the covenant that came through Abraham. The writer's observation that man never kept any of these covenants that he mentioned, and that this covenant that we have was between God and Christ, according to Paul's writings in Hebrews. That's very, very accurate for sure.
I was thinking when I read this letter, I was thinking that a lot of the different covenants that people say we had are linked to the manifestly false doctrine of dispensationalism. As you know, dispensationalism is around about 150 years old. Going back past there, you'll never hear of it. Part of that thing is the rapture and then the millennium and so forth. And in there you've got the dispensation of innocence, Adam and Eve in the garden. You've got the dispensation of grace between there and the law. You've got the dispensation of the law. You've got the dispensation of the church. I remember when I was a kid, I saw all these maps up on the wall, and they were all divided up, and then the last days, the 70th week of day, all that stuff.
God, I remember those,
Well, see, we don't know what covenant God had with Adam and Eve. All we know is that he created them and put a couple of conditions down. Big difference between conditions and a covenant.
Yeah.
What covenant did Job have? We have no idea. And yet people love to overlay Job's story with the covenant of the law or the new creation covenant, which started at the cross. It can't be done. It just can't be done. You may as well try and make a fish ride a bicycle. It just, you can't do it.
Yeah.
Well, you can do it, but you're going to look awful funny. do I think that there were several prior to the new covenant myself? No. I think what he said, I think what Michael just said, you can overlay the concept of a covenant on almost any story you want to, but I wouldn't be giving it a whole lot of credence myself.
Yeah, it's you know, it is probably a good idea that if it doesn't say it's a covenant, don't imply it's a covenant. If it's a covenant, I think that scriptures are smart enough to tell you this is a covenant. Boy, do we do that with in Christianity with so many subjects. We take known subjects and imply that other things are the same subject. Oh, boy, I tell you what, that's like dropping an atom bomb in the middle of a populated community. It's just destruction to do that. It's unbelievable.
It is called conflation.
Yes.
When you conflate one thing with another and they just are not related.
Gospel Revolution.
If you're a registered Amazon user, then Amazon will donate to Mike Williams Ministries 0.5% of everything you buy from them. Nothing else will change, not the price, not your address, not your billing, nothing, except now you'll be an active participant in the gospel revolution without it costing you one extra brass razu. How good is that? And all you do is you go to amazon.smile. And start setting it up. If you go to gospelrevolution.com, go to the donate link. Under the donate link, you will come to a page that gives you the option to go to Amazon donations. Every single person who gives into our ministry should first be starting with the with that, because that one costs you nothing. It's what dentists call pain-free extraction.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, Christianity is a religion of ifs, ands, buts, and maybes. One Christian could say to another, "Do you think when old Joe died, he went to heaven?" The other Christian could say, "Well, sure he did. That's if he was born again, and if he had no unconfessed sin in his life, but not if he didn't believe the way we do. Sure, old Joe's in heaven. Maybe." If you want to put all those nagging doubts to bed once and for all, you need to read your copy of Mike Williams' book, One, The Gospel According to Mike, on Amazon for as little as $3.03. Go get you one. Go on. What are you waiting for? Stop this podcast right now. Go out and buy it. If you feel you've received real value from this podcast, I'm asking you to seriously consider donating towards it in this current pledge drive. Why don't you call our Florida office on area code 561-557-1329. That's 561-557-1329. And speak to us about how you can participate, or just go to Gospel Revolution and do what I said before about Amazon Donate. Hit the donate link there, and that'll take you all the way to everything you want. So now it is good night from myself, Beres Bartlett, from the GR Studios right here in Eva, Alabama.
And it's good night from Michael Williams right here in South Florida in the Palm Beach Gardens. And we really appreciate you guys. And I promise you everything is good in 33410. Things are back on keel. We are in the pledge drive, and I'm going to be calling you. I've had a blast talking with the folks that I've been able to reach so far, and you guys have been generous, and we're going to continue the pledge drive. We'll update you more on that on our next PowerCast. We love you.
We hope you enjoyed today's PowerCast, but if you didn't, remember, just because you're offended doesn't mean you're right. So if you prefer learning how to think to being told what to think, join us again next week, same time, same channel. Well, we're going to do the same thing all over again.
Mucho better.
The song you've heard me featuring throughout this show, it's called One Song by Tevin Camp, T-E-V-I-N Camp, C-A-M-P. I found it on Spotify, but you should be able to find it on, I imagine, on YouTube as well. And because I love it so much, here is a clean cut of One Song by Tevin Camp.
One song of love, one song of peace, one song to make all our troubles cease. One hymn, one theme, one hope, one.